this week's topic is about activating the brain. And one of the pieces, you know, in activating the brain is kind of about regulating mood, right? So part of this is about making sure that our kids have enough focus, that they have, you know, a healthy brain so they can do what they need to do. But then the other piece of it is this mood regulation. And sometimes this is about us. And so I'm kind of going a little bit off script today because it's just the two of you. But this, I sense, and check me on this, for both of you, this theme of how do I stay out of frustration mode and in problem-solving mode is something that really is key to your success. Do you both agree?
Yeah.
Jennifer?
Sorry, yes.
Okay. So I guess the question is, how often do you find yourself taking aim on your own frustration management?
And not as often as I should. Maybe when you remind me every other week or something.
Because you need like a little recording of Diane on your phone or something, or somebody on your phone that says, "How's that trigger management thing going, Lori?"
In my calendar, because I do pay attention to my calendar.
Well, there you go. Jennifer, what about you?
I think the same as Lori. I should just set up a standing appointment, you know, repeat it every afternoon or every evening, you know, take aim. Why am I upset? You know, what's going on?
Well, because here's the thing, and it's like I need to write a blog about this, but it's just, even if we're just, the frustration is at that little low sort of irritated level, and we're not full out triggered and yelling at our kids or hiding in the closet if we're a flight kind of person, what happens in the brain is that we shift out of problem-solving mode. And so instead of going, how can I help my child right now? How can I meet my child where they are right now? Yes, we did an hour about this yesterday, and we missed something. That's the reality right now. What do we do to solve the problem instead of being frustrated? And the habit is, so if we stay out of frustration mode, we can problem solve. If we're in frustration mode, we start to ruminate. We go into our emotions. That middle part of our brain is all about emotions and old habits. And so all of us, and I'm guilty and I'm raising my hand here, our old habit is getting frustrated and angry. And so when we kind of fall out of that, we get stuck in that cycle of being frustrated. And then we end up yelling and it breaks the energy. And then we're like, oh, crap, I yelled at my kid again, or whatever it is for us, right? So it's that noticing. And so I want to ask you both, will you play with me a little bit on trigger management today?
Okay.
Lori?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. So tell me, when you guys get triggered, where do you notice it in your body first?
Probably my neck, my upper back, or my shoulders, just all tense. It feels like, I mean, this morning I felt like I was, like, in a fist fight or beaten up or something. I was just so exhausted. Yeah.
Okay. Jennifer, where do you notice it in your body?
I think my head.
Your head. So what does your head start to feel like when you get triggered?
Like a migraine almost.
Hmm. Okay. So on a scale of migraine coming on. What else?
Just tense. I don't know, just probably just that, you know, just, you know, my head, like, then I'll explode, like, here we go again.
Yeah, okay. So the next question is kind of a compound question. So think about those moments when you get triggered. How aware are you that you're getting triggered? And where in the trigger cycle do you become aware? You know, so 0 is not triggered and 10 is completely triggered. At what point do you become aware that you're triggered? Is it when you're already at 10, or do you notice in the middle?
Well, I notice in the middle, and I think it's a lot because I've been talking to you for a year, and now I at least am more aware of it. What I do varies. I mean, sometimes I just keep going, and then it goes up to 10. Sometimes I walk away. Sometimes I just, like, breathe. But I notice that for me, I don't know if you said it's like catastrophizing things. Like, okay, my God, she missed this culinary quiz. Okay, well, she's got an A in the class. You know, so but now once I calm down, and I think she misses this stuff. She's therefore never going to succeed in school. You know, it kind of expands. So when you realize, oh, my God,
right.
Just breathe, you know. But it's easy to go there really quickly.
It is. Jennifer, what about you? At what point do you notice it?
When I noticed I get triggered.
We're in this cycle. So it's kind of like you're not even aware. You're completely unconscious until you've already lost it. Or you start to get a little bit upset and you can sense that you're getting upset and you fall in anyway. Or, you know,
Sorry,
or somewhere
one.
In the middle.
I sense I'm
Sorry,
getting
that one.
I fall in anyways.
You fall in anyway. Well, that's the good news. So there's an analogy. They teach it in 12-step program about like you're walking down the street and there's a hole in the road. And at the very beginning, it's like you fall in the hole. You don't even realize where you are, but you're there. And it takes you forever to get out, and you get out. And the second time, you see the hole and you fall in anyway, and it takes you a little while to get out. The third time, you see the hole. You start to walk around it, but you fall into it because it's a habit. And then the fourth time you walk around the hole, and then the fifth time you go down another street, you know. So we're all on this pathway, but it's about understanding and noticing. Laura, you were talking about the later parts of the process for trigger management. So the first one is just being aware of your triggers. And so part of that is noticing physically that it's happening. And then the other part of it is understanding what's really going on in our head, what's that thought process that we have that's causing the triggers. So you've got to know that you're being triggered in order to take the next step, which is to reclaim your brain. So for both of you, is your biggest opportunity in beginning to notice that you are triggered early enough to start the trigger management process, or is it more knowing what to do once you've figured out that you are triggered? Does that distinction make sense?
Now, can you say that again?
Yes. So for some of us, because we're completely unaware of when we're being triggered, the opportunities to go, okay, how do I begin to notice that I'm getting triggered, right? For other people, when they do notice they're triggered, it's, okay, I'm getting triggered, what do I do? Because I'm aware that I'm getting triggered. And that kind of, I think, because you said you know that you're about to fall in the hole and you fall in anyway, I'm thinking you're
mm-hmm.
in the later bucket. But what do you think, Jennifer?
I think I'm in, the later. So.
Lori, which one are you?
I think I'm in the later too. I mean, it's kind of like when you see, like if she asks for help and then I see she's not really interested in what I'm saying, then I go, wait, you know, what can I do from there? So I can see that it's just starting I'm going to blow. I actually even said to her, I said, look, I can feel it. I'm really close. That's what I say to her. I say to myself,
right.
Like, okay, we got to do something before I move further along, you know.
Well, and so what it sounds like, and so this is what I'm curious about is how often is your trigger management response to try to fix the situation? So it's like, oh my gosh, I'm getting upset. We have to fix this right now.
Yeah, but I also think, when you start, think the trigger, my trigger management, my expectations of her are probably not realistic, because when she comes to me, I expect her then to sit and pay attention when she's asking for help, because she can't, you know, and she's not. So maybe that expectation of is not realistic for her.
No question. And if your trigger management is fix it, it's really not a very healthy trigger management, because fix it is fight or flight.
Right.
So my guess is that it's about really making sure that you're in a calm place and an untriggered state before you try to tackle the problem. So how often do you really take the time to get completely calm and not just holding your breath calm?
Never. Because I just want to get the math over with, because I know that there's something else after that and something else after that. Yeah, right.
Okay, fair. Jennifer, what about you?
Probably just want to get it over with, get it done.
Yeah. Well, and that's natural, and so that's the flight that's the fight or flight reaction. It's like, we got to just get this done, right? And what I'm going to challenge you both to do, because you both seem to have similar patterns, is no action takes place until you're really, really engaged and back in problem-solving mode. When I say that, does that sound like a good challenge? Does that sound like an unrealistic challenge? Does that sound like I'm smoking dope?
Say that again.
My challenge to you is no problem solving until you are really, really calm. Everything stops.
That's a challenge, but maybe I'll need to smoke some dope in college or whatever to get me to that calm place. Yeah, that's a challenge. That's a good challenge, though.
Yeah, I'd like to try that challenge.
Because here's the thing, we all know that our ability to really, really be present and problem solve when we're even a little bit triggered is zero, because we just want to fix it. We want it to stop it. We're going to throw 700 solutions at it. We're going to get mad at our kids for not doing what they said that they'd do or what they want to do or whatever else. I mean, that's the triggered response. So the real goal here is to get completely untriggered before you try to address the issue. So what are some of your trigger management strategies? What are some of the things you do to unravel the trigger that you already know work a little?
Well, there's a few times where it's still in a manageable place where I can actually just, I calm down, and I, like, if it's math, I try to explain it again in a different way without going, oh my God, you know, how many times? So, but, and that's much more effective, obviously, you know, for probably most children, of just being calm and explaining over again. But,
all right. So what you're saying is that you start ramping up. You realize you're ramping up. What is it that you do to start unramping, so that you can get back there? Is it a thought that you have in your head? Is it a breath? Is it a little time? What are the things that help you to go back?
It's a pause, even as short as 2 seconds, and a breath for sure.
Okay.
And I think to my brain, thinks, hey, this isn't working this way, so I got to try a calmer approach.
Okay, great.
A pause.
Jennifer, what about you?
Find a pause or a timeout.
Taking a pause or a timeout. Okay.
Yeah,
all
walk
right.
Away from the situation.
Okay. So how do you know when you're really calm again?
I don't know. I don't think I'm ever, you know, because I'm in this still in the frame of let's get it done. I'm not going to pause or take a time out, or the break might be 15 minutes and that's it. And that might, and then we're working on another, okay, let's touch back in 15 minutes. And then that 15 minutes, we're like, okay, it's, you know, 5 more minutes. So that's not even a 15 minute pause, a break. It's just, you're just stopping kind of the anxiety, and then you come back and it hasn't always corrected itself. So I never know.
I guess my question is, so that it sounds like the taking a break. So while you're on that break, What's going through your head? Triggered thoughts or calming thoughts?
Trigger thoughts more, like, okay, another, you know, it's more because when I do the 15, you know, whatever, 15-minute break, it's really for her. Okay, go watch your show for 15 more minutes. Just to, we need to separate. And then I do some work. I don't do anything calming. So it's more, I think I say that she needs to break, but in fact, I need to break.
Right, you need to break. And so, yeah, so what could you do? So what it sounds like for you, Lori, is that part of it is the thought process, right? So if you can get to the point where you go, okay, wait, naughty versus neurological. This is neurological. This isn't naughty. This is, she, you know, she really is having a hard time. How do I get back to a place where I can help her? You know, you kind of do that self-talk to kind of get you back in that space. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think if I just say I'm going to go meditate for 10 minutes, that would be great. I should do that.
What do you do instead?
I go and work in my office and, or, you know, just do busy work or for that time, nothing soothing.
So here's what I notice a lot, tell me if this resonates, is that when we have all that extra energy from the trigger and we decide, okay, wait, the trigger's not helping, I've got to calm down, that energy has to go somewhere. And so taking action of some sort, cleaning your kitchen, taking the dog for a walk, all of those things kind of help get rid of some of that extra energy. And so if that's a pattern for you, then part of your untriggering process might need to be, let me get rid of some of this extra energy. I found myself frustrated about something this morning, and I cleaned out my Tupperware drawer. It felt really, really good, and it took me 5 minutes. But I felt like I did something, right? Because it's like when you're in those situations, particularly with our kids, when you're in one of those situations where it feels like there's not progress happening and it's like you feel like you're banging your head against the wall, finding something. Those of us who are achievers by nature need to have something to check the box. So, Jennifer, what in this resonates for you? Oops, do you have us on mute?
Hello?
There you are.
Sorry.
That's all right. Oh, did you hear my question, Jennifer?
No, I'm sorry. I was on hold for a bit. Work call.
Oh, okay. So my question was, we were talking about the fact that when you get all that pent-up energy, when any of us, and I'm in the same boat as you guys, it's like you get that pent-up energy, and then you're trying to de-trigger, untrigger, whatever the word would be. Sometimes your body just needs action and accomplishment in order to feel, because you've got all this pent-up energy from the frustration, and it's like it needs to go somewhere. So sometimes part of our de-escalation process might be, I'm going to go in the other room and clean my bathroom, or I'm going to go do this, or I'm going to do that, so that we feel like we're doing something, because I hear both of you saying, I just want to get it done, right? So the question is could part of your de-escalation process be getting something else done to feel accomplished and to get rid of some of that pent-up energy? And so my question to you, Jennifer, is what comes up for you in that?
Yeah, I think just get it done, just go and do something else. I will sometimes tend to, I hate to say, like, go play Candy Crush or something on my phone, just something mindless. To try and calm down and get refocused again.
Yeah. So, Lori, anything to add?
I don't play Candy Crush, but I have other such online vices, other games and stuff, so I get it too.
Yeah.
Calm down.
Well, I think that's the piece of it. Go ahead, Jennifer. What were you going to say?
No, I've been having sinus infection. I just coughed.
Oh, okay. So I think that part of it is kind of really knowing. So the second, we're still in the second phase of trigger management, which is how do you unravel, how do you reclaim your brain, which is what we were talking about activating the brain this week. But how do you reclaim your brain? And so part of that reclaiming your brain might be, I need to take some real space. I need to not just give my kid a timeout, but I need to take a timeout for myself. I need to do something and accomplish something so I feel like I can calm down a little bit and get rid of some of that extra energy. Once you're there, then you can move on to the third step. And so the third step is there's a prevention part of it, which is the, you know, kind of really understanding what are some of the thoughts in your head that are causing the trigger. And Lori, you talked about the catastrophizing. And there's a lot of shoulds in that, you know, not just in the catastrophizing, but it's that this shouldn't be happening right now. This can't be happening right now. I don't have time for this to happen right now. Or here we go again. This is always going to happen. You know, it's that knowing what that triggered voice sounds like, and then figuring out what another story is that you could have put in place that would feel a little bit better and help you to stay in problem solving rather than getting re-triggered. So that's the third step, is replacing the old triggered thought with a new thought that helps you to move forward. So, Lori, what's your most dominant triggered thought, or two or three things that, you know, you mentioned catastrophizing, and what are yours?
Oh, you mean of, like, why I blow things out of like, when I look at...
What's the voice in what does the voice in your head say?
That she's not going to be able to be on her own.
She's never going to be able to be on her own. What else?
That's a pretty big one.
Yep. What else?
That's it. That's really, because all those things build up.
And it's scary. So my guess is that there's something else in there, which is, I have to fix this right now so that she, or it's never going to happen. Is that part of it, or is there urgency there, or is there defeat? What's the energy behind the, she's never going to be able to be on her own?
I don't know. I guess it's, you know, she's already in high school. I mean, it's got to be, you can't wait too much longer, you know. I'm 50, 54, you know. It's like there's a big age difference, and so I'm not always going to be around to be there for her.
Yeah. So is it, I have to fix this now?
Well, it's not, I want her to be able to be independent, to be able to advocate for herself, to be successful, she's a happy kid, but to, you know, it's just, so you just think, oh my gosh, if she's struggling, it's kind of, and there's anger too, because it's like, you know, I just feel I always have to do it myself. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
You know, it's just like, what are these teachers? So yes, it's just fear. It's all fear. You know, it's not.
Okay.
It's
so it's fear that you're going to have to do it forever.
Well, that I'm not going to be around forever. You know, so it's like.
What's she going to do when I'm not here?
Yeah, and it's just, I think all parents do it, but it's just obviously when you have kids that have more challenges and things, I just wish something would be easy for her.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's scary. I mean, it's you're anxious about her ability to be on her own. High school doesn't feel like it's that long. You're exhausted. You've been doing this for a long time, and you're not always going to be here. And you want her to be able to be independent. So,
I guess
if you listen to me say that, so I'm going to say it two different ways. So it's like, you know, my kid is having a hard time being successful right now. And I want them to be able to be independent by the time they need to be independent.
Well, isn't the time to be independent like years ago?
No. What's the time to be independent? Why is there a magic date on the calendar?
I don't know. I just, Lori got me in tears.
Oh, and it's hard, guys. And this is, I want to stay here because this is the thing. What's the story you're telling yourself?
It's like he should be independent by now. I mean, I'm just thinking, I mean, he's so avoiding anything he can to do the SAT or the ACT. It's like he just doesn't want to. And it's like I'm biting my tongue saying, well, fine, just go straight to the military, which I don't want him to do. Because I really believe he needs to get school first, some school.
Yeah.
But he's just fighting just the basic stuff. Like, you know, you've got to take it, like it or not.
Hang on a second. So there's a should in there that I want to challenge. Are you willing to do that, Jennifer?
What should?
He should be independent right now. You have to do this. I mean, that's what I'm getting. Am I wrong?
Well, I would think he'd want to. He'd want to be able to drive. He'd want
to. So what if, and I'm going to interrupt you, and I'm sorry. What if he wants to and it's just hard? I hear you assuming that because he's not, it's because he doesn't want to. Or even because he says he doesn't want to, it's because he really doesn't want to.
Well, for like SATs or ACTs, he's never tested well. He's always had fear of tests. And even with accommodations and extra time and stuff, he still hates it.
Yes.
Hates doing anything.
And it's hard. It's hard. But if you think that he should like it, or you want to force him to do it, how is that different than, wow, my kid is really having a hard time getting into this thing. What do I do? How do I help? What are the options?
You know, I don't know.
Even just asking what are the options instead of he has to do it. Because the options, like with the SAT, it's like, okay, buddy, yeah, I know you don't want to take this. Go and spend 3 hours. Just, you know, you've got plenty of time to take it again. Or don't take it now or whatever. You know, find out. If you think it has to happen and it should happen and he should want it to happen, how is your approach going to be different than if you go, wow, I've got a kid who really, really, really is not into taking the SAT right now. What do I do? Can you feel the difference? Can you feel the difference in terms of the perspective? That's what I'm searching for.
Yeah.
So how often do you find yourself in have-to mode or should mode or fear mode versus problem-solving mode?
I think I'm in fear mode a lot.
Yeah. And it's normal because it's scary stuff.
Yeah,
it's life on the line.
Yeah, like Lori, it's like, you know, it's time. I don't want you, you know, I love you, but I don't want you at home all the time, all day, you know, permanently. And, you know, we can't always be around to help.
Right. It's absolutely appropriate to have a vision and goals for your kid to become more and more independent. The place where most of us get tripped up is that we want it to happen now, and it's not happening now. Lori, what comes up for you as I say that?
Well, it's interesting. One of the things that I've been part of our town for the past year is on a team called Preparedness for Adult Life, and we have the school superintendent and lots of the youth center and the job youth center, and the whole, because there's a large population of the kids that don't go on to colleges. It's unfortunately, it's primarily a male American population that they're targeting, but there's also the kids in the special ed group the nice thing is that there's so many opportunities for these kids that not everyone is four-year colleges the way to go, and there's technical schools. There's so many companies coming in that say, hey, if you have decent math or you have something else, you could get good jobs. So it's kind of ironic that I'm been working on this group saying just get have these kids in high school have plans, whether it includes military, whether it includes technical school or community college, or right into some type of employment or four-year college. And myself, I feel such pressure because in our group, and my friends, all their kids go to these top schools and colleges, and Lily, I'm hoping, but it's kind of like, but we should be celebrating these kids and know that college is not necessarily the right path for them, regardless of their ability of how they do on an SAT and all that. I can't even imagine Lily taking an SAT.
She will at some point. So hang on a second, though. Because what you're describing is really very interesting, because there's part of you that can rationalize it and can say, you know what, college may not be for her, and she may not be able to take stuff on time, and she may take longer, and she may be on a different trajectory. And that's okay.
But she might have discussion that college isn't necessary, It's a different world today than when we were in school, that it's like so many kids are, there's so many, IT, there's so many other fields that don't require it. But I know I'm rationalizing it. I can say that. I can tell that to Jennifer. I can say that as no one that's emotionally committed. But when it's my kid, it's like, it's hard.
So what's the voice? So that's the thing. So what's the voice in the head? Because there's some, so you can get that, but there's some emotion there. The fear is there. What are you afraid of?
Well, I mean, there's short-term fears and there's long-term. Again, it's, I don't know.
If you know, theoretically, that every child has their own trajectory and there's something out there for everyone, and your daughter's a lovely, inspired kid who's got a brilliant future ahead of her, what becomes possible?
Yeah, I totally believe, I have faith that everything will work out, but it's, some days are harder than, to really buy into it.
Yeah. So the challenge is when those thoughts come up, those fear thoughts, the she's never going to get there, she's never going to be on her own, what if I'm not here to protect her, what if I'm not here to help her, need to be replaced with a thought that's going to help you to get back into problem-solving mode. So it's not something Pollyanna, but it's something you need to be willing to consider is true. So that's the third step. What are you willing to consider might also be true that's going to help you to stay out of triggered mode? So, Lori, go back to your situation, because it sounds like you've got the rationalized thought, which is maybe a good place to start. What thought could you put in instead?
Well, I mean, I think you just talk about post-high school and things. I think she'll have her path, and I'll be there to support her. And, you know, we don't know what that path is right now, but you know, I think she's, you know, she's a happy kid and she gets along well with people and, you know, so she'll find her place and who knows what that's going to be.
She'll find her place. And who knows what it'll be.
Yeah, that's really good. That's brilliant.
That's your thought, okay? Okay, on a scale of 0 to 10, right now, while you're on the phone with me and with Jennifer, how willing are you to believe that your daughter will find her place?
A 10.
Even though right now you don't know what it'll be.
Right.
What's your number?
A 10. I believe it.
A 10. Okay. Awesome. If you could have that 10 in a calm, supported moment, which is where we are right now, I have every confidence that with the right reminders and processes that you can remember that thought in the moment and help you to untrigger and get back into problem-solving mode. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Jennifer, what's your old thought and what's your new thought?
I think, yeah, I mean, he's going to do something.
And it's probably going to be pretty stinking cool. Because he's a cool kid. Are you willing to consider that?
Yeah. Yeah, I will.
So I'm going to ask you to stretch your thought beyond he's going to do something to something that maybe is even a little bit more positive. How far can you go? What are you willing to consider?
That he will do something and he'll be happy with whatever he chooses to do.
So he'll do something and he'll find something that makes him happy.
Yeah. Because, I mean, at that point, it's his life. You know?
Yeah.
And he has to find
What you really want is he has to find it for himself. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, and ultimately what you want is for him to be happy, wherever that lands, right?
Right.
Okay. So, on a scale of 0 to 10, Jennifer, here in this room, how willing are you to believe that he'll find something that makes him happy?
10.
Okay, all right. So the exercise here is the new thought. And what I would tell you is this: the word neuroplasticity kind of pops into my head. And I don't know if you guys have heard that term before, but it's taken a lot of habit for you guys to get into and create the thoughts you have right now. I mean, it's scary, and fear is a pretty intense thought. And so that thought is pretty dominant in your brain, particularly when you get upset or get scared. And so the opportunity here is to really exercise that new thought. And so I think my challenge to both of you is, how do you begin to give that new thought some additional weight so that when you get upset, you can calm down and then reclaim that thought? So you got to make that thought a habit before you're upset so that you can get to the thought when you are upset. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, she says, you sound really timid, Jennifer. What's going on?
And I guess I'm just trying to understand what you're saying
Well, you guys are both a 10 when you're in the room with me, and we just talked about, we cleared, so what we did was we cleared all the emotion. We let the fear have its space. We let it have its day. We got emotional about it. Both of you got emotional about it. And then you could get to your new thought.
Right.
And so we really kind of had a control the trigger moment. And we need to be able to duplicate that when you're standing there looking at four missing assignments on the campus portal.
Right.
So for most of us, what it means is that we need to think the thought enough times when we're not upset so that we can think the thought when we are upset. So that's where the new habit comes in. So it's that if five times a day I say to myself, my kid's going to find something that's going to make him happy, I have every confidence that he'll find something that's going to make him happy. And I just think that over and over and over again. That new thought becomes a habit so that when I do start to get triggered, I can go back and find that thought quickly to help me to shift and get back into problem solving. Does that make more sense now, Jennifer?
Yeah.
Okay. Lori, what comes up for you?
No, I think that's, you know, it's kind of, we have to make it a habit to have that be a mantra that you say. And hopefully after a while that it will come up when the times when things are getting a little more heated, you know, that she'll find her place or whatnot. But yes, I think that's.
Because here's the thing, go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I said just repeating it when I'm calm will make it hopefully more likely that I'll repeat it when I'm not calm.
Right. Because here's the thing. It's like you guys know the fourth step. The fourth step is problem solving. I mean, you guys have both been in the program for a year. You've got a lot of tools in your toolbox. And if you can avoid getting triggered, you can start calling on those tools more readily. But if you're constantly getting triggered and you're having a hard time getting past that first place, it's hard for you to even partner with your kid or communicate with your kid or come up with a solution with your kid. So I guess that as we kind of close off, it's like, let's, when you think about this whole process and let's ask our four questions and say, you know, what's the homework with this that's really going to help you to start exercising that muscle differently? How does this trigger management stuff become more of a priority on a day-to-day basis? So that's kind of the end of my thought there. But so let's just go to page 25 and take some notes here. And the four questions. What did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity or takeaway? What's an aha? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how can I set myself up for success? So take some notes and then let's unwind this one more time and just, you know, share an aha and a what do you think you're going to try it for the next couple of weeks?
Well, I think my goal is of course the trigger management, replacing an old thought with a new thought. And I like this time thing about a time out that when, you know, because as I said in the past, it's always been for her to calm down when in fact I needed to calm down probably more. So to do something in that period that's either going to, I mean, I think taking the dog for a walk is great because you get outside and you get some good energy. And then just work on the kind of creating a mantra that I truly do believe in, that she'll find her place. And over time, hopefully it'll just soak in and become the first that comes to my mind and not the fear.
Love that. Jennifer, what about you?
Probably the same, just, you know, having something ready to immediately go to if I feel myself get triggered. And then while I'm calming down, figure out, okay, how am I going to proceed that's not going to just solve it for him? So.
How does that feel?
Okay.
And are you both willing to report back in a couple weeks on how things went?
Yep, sounds good.
Awesome. Awesome. Great call today. I love going off script. That was fun.
Jennifer, our kids are lucky. Jennifer, our kids are lucky that they have such caring mothers.
Yeah, I don't know if they realize how lucky they have it yet, but I'm hoping that they see.
So can I share something? Because I went to school with my daughter this morning. And we had her junior planning session with a counselor, and I had to do some advocating for her. And she texted me after I was on my way home, and she said, "Thank you very much for being supportive. I love you dearly."
Oh wow, that's nice.
But it took time to get there, right? So it didn't happen overnight. And she was my second kid, so I probably made fewer mistakes with her than I did with the first one. But, you know, they notice. Even if they can't say it or don't know how to say it, they notice. So trust that. And you guys are both amazing moms, and they are lucky to have you. Thank you for saying that, Lori.
Ooh, okay.
All right, ladies. Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Okay, talk to you later.
Bye.
Oh, Diane?
Yes, ma'am?
I'm not getting any emails from, like, about the calls or Lifeline or anything.
Let's look real quick.
In the past several weeks, it hadn't dawned on me until I'm like, wait, is there a call today? I'm like, oh, my calendar says it, but I haven't gotten any emails.
Okay, let me look, because we've been trying to clean up everybody and make sure that a bunch of people renew in the fall. And so let me just want to make sure that you got renewed properly. Let me find you in our spreadsheet here. Jennifer Carson. So this says you renewed. Okay, so let me find you in this system. Maybe there's something going on with your email address. Is it the W? Wait, let me make sure I've got the recording